That was a hugely rich discourse around a very complex and complicated, and some of you will recognise the difference, subject. And what I want to try and do is pick on a few things which I think have been left open-ended as challenges to you to ask questions about and for the panel to discuss. One of the first things that Lord Krebs mentioned was value for money and innovation, that they can coexist. My experience of working in government is the analytic tools and the expertise that understands how to do value for money and innovation is sadly lacking. They know how to do innovation and they know how to do value for money, but to do them together is something which seems to be almost excluded by culture, hence the risk aversion, and in some cases is excluded by policy constructs and even by legislation. So I think there is, it's worthy of examination when we go back over your report, if I may, in 18 months, to see actually have the structures which have got in the way of delivering value for money and innovation been dismantled to a sufficient extent that it's a lot easier to enter the conversation and enter the process of delivery of value for money and innovation. Innovation at scale is also a subtext in Lord Krebs' remark, that it's happening at relatively small scale, but to do it at large scale is something we don't appear to be able to do. We don't seem to be able to embark on those processes. Why? Well, partly because what is being put at risk is obviously a huge amount of money, political capital, or other forms of social capital. And I think we need to understand how scale works at an innovation. And again, there are two things which don't sit easily, not only in academia, but they don't sit easily in departments. So scale is important too. He trailed an episode of evidence, and it is actually written up in the report, so I'm not going to dwell on it, except to say one thing, which was the important factor about my intervention was that it was very early. It was before we'd started spending £3.5 billion on a very large infrastructure programme in London, not halfway through. And as a result of influencing it before we'd committed any contractual, major contractual obligation, we allowed those contracts which did commit major financial activity to start to be much more joined up and much more rationally connected. And those of you who want to know more can catch me afterwards and I'll tell you more detail. There were two elements, partly in Lord Krebs' closing remarks and something that James Darren mentioned, which is the procurement process comes in various forms. And I think it's very important to understand that we use a procurement process that is fit for purpose for that which we are procuring. And I think the rugby ball diagram should be on every accounting officer's wall to remind them that he has choices, he or she has choices about how to go about doing procurement. Because you buy the right thing using the right instrument. And if you use the wrong instrument, you will get the wrong consequences. However, who chooses which procurement method, I think, is also something we need to understand. Do accounting officers, procurement officers, is it always in the client's grasp to know what method of procurement, or should suppliers be brave enough to come back on occasions and say, from where we sit, with our experience, you are choosing the wrong method to buy what it is we are there to sell? Because I've talked to a lot of suppliers and they say, no, not prepared to do that, that's far too risky, because they don't have the trust relationship yet to have that really deep, intimate conversation about what it is going to happen. So they either bid with the wrong instrument because that's what the client has asked, or they've walked away, neither of which is a satisfactory outcome. So I think, whilst I absolutely agree with your diagram about there being a hybrid set of things to use, which one to use in any given instance, it's still a decision that someone or some group of people need to make. I mentioned being involved very early and asking the right questions, and not only asking the right questions but getting all the answers before you embark on a major procurement activity, I think, is crucial. So front loading the activity with a lot of analysis, design, consideration, I think is very important. General Bill Robbins, who's sitting in the audience, and I were part of a IT working party in 1999 when we did an analysis of why large IT projects fail. Bill will remember it. And one of the reports that we dragged out that MOD had done in the mid-90s, this is 16 years ago, showed how important it was that not only IT projects, but all front projects, had the best team you could buy, bought in the first 10% of the expenditure of a project, so that everything was designed and analysed by the best brains you could afford that early. We still don't appear to have learnt that lesson in a holistic way across the whole range of disciplines. I'm not sure we've even learnt it in IT, which is what we were aiming that particular activity at. So I do worry that the change programmes that Sally's talking about are still very difficult to embed in the public culture at a range of scales, central policy departments, agencies that do a lot of the actual procurement, and importantly in local government, because a huge amount of the money is actually spent in local government and by local agencies. So for me, another very important touchstone is early. Early is where you spend a lot of the intellectual effort to make a difference to the outcome of innovation in public procurement. The last point I want to make is a point that Sally made very quickly in passing, which was the use of the web to share information. If we can achieve transparency of knowledge and information and know-how across the whole community that is involved, whichever side of a contractual space they're involved in, then again we're much more likely to get a satisfactory outcome, because everyone will be sharing information that is pertinent to their particular role in this. I was going to say game, it's not a game, but there's a lot of game theoretic stuff that could be applied to it, so that trust is built up. Because if we don't have mechanisms that build trust, we'll have mechanisms that destroy it. And we won't achieve collaboration, we won't achieve innovation if we don't have mechanisms by which we reinforce trust rather than destroy it. So I'll leave